My name's Kailani. I'm a compulsive eater. Hey, guys. I'm so happy you're all here. And I said this before, I'll say it again. For those of you who are concerned that you're having a workshop with someone who looks incredibly young, I am young, but I'm 32 and not 19. So, as most people, I got carded to a rated R movie a couple months ago, which was like 17 plus, and I don't know. So, I have a little bit of life experience, a lot of the struggle of this disease under my belt from the past. And I'm just so grateful to be here and share this with you guys. We're going to try to pump a lot into the next hour and 15 minutes. And it's going to be very interactive in terms of you doing work. I'm not just going to sit here and talk at you. This is an opportunity to develop a close relationship with God. I'm supposed to read this before we go any further. Today the session is being taped. If you choose to participate in any discussion in this session, you must sign this form granting Compulsive Eaters Anonymous how specific rights and taping your voice. So if anyone speaks later on in the workshop, just at the end, come and give us your signature. That would be great. There are handouts. Everyone should have two handouts. I will... If you're listening to this online in the future, I will say all the pages that we're going to be reading, so don't worry. Okay, let's just open with a serenity prayer. Yeah? Okay. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will not mine be done. Amen. So, again, my name is Kailani. I'm a compulsive eater. I have 3 years, 7 months, and 14 days of abstinence here in Compulsive Eaters Anonymous How. I'm down 60 pounds from my top weight. And just to say it up front a little bit, I consider myself a critical level compulsive eater. I was a non-functioning addict. When I was 15, I delved into the anorexic side of this disease. My low weight was 89 pounds. And then when I was 18, I gained 60 pounds in 3 months. I couldn't contain my restricting anymore. And then I proceeded to gain 100 pounds in the course of that year. So I have a really radical weight fluctuation, and I have, the line came for the vanity, stayed for the sanity. Thank you. My identity was so wrapped up with my image, my self-image, and so to gain that amount of weight that quickly, I started isolating. I moved back to my family's house in Virginia, and for a period of about 3 years, I didn't leave except to go get food. And I lived primarily in a fantasy world that it talks about in the Big Book, just watching television, eating compulsively, and dreaming about how great and big my life would be. So I'm a volume eater. Sugar, flour, yes, but quantity, man. I will eat anything, and in large quantity. Eat till I can't move, get up, do it again. I can't do it again. I'll never do this again. God, help me. And then the second there's like that little space, I'm back to the races again. The phenomenon of craving, the obsession of the mind. So I qualify to be here. The last thing in the world I wanted to do was weigh and measure my food. It makes me want to cry just think about it. It's the last thing I wanted to do. Like, I'm not going to give up my freedom. What if I travel? What if I get married? What if I, And it's like I could what if my way right out of this. And I remember the first time I weighed and measured my first meal, I was like, whoa, this isn't so bad. It sounded way worse in my head than it actually was physically. It's not so hard to put my bowl on the scale and throw the food in there, and then eat it. And plus, we get a lot of food, If you weigh it, and you're right, you get a lot of food. So I was relieved. And so it's just this program is into action. There's no chapter in the Big Book that says into feelings, into thinking. It's into action. And it's not until I put into action the principles that were offered here that I began to see results. And for me, I didn't want the fat serenity that I'd found in the other 12-step room I'd been in for 5 years. I think it's an incredible room. works for a lot of people, my compulsion had reached too far of a level. I needed to be weighed in here, literally. So I'm going to assume everyone in here has taken step one. And if you haven't, just let's take it right now. Admit that you're powerless and that your life is unmanageable. It's the most important step. I was in 12-step rooms, I think, for 5 years before I truly took this step, before I really admitted that I had an illness. I knew that I had an eating disorder. I knew that my life was unmanageable, but I didn't actually believe that I was sick, that there was actually something wrong with me, and I had lost the power to manage and control my eating like a normal person. So I say this a lot, and if you've heard me say it, you know, forgive me, but it's like losing a finger. That's like, I had that thought, like, if I lost a finger and it's not coming back, am I going to keep trying to, like, pretend it's there, and maybe tomorrow I'll get it? And it's like, no, it's gone. And that's where I am with the disease for one day at a time. It's like, it's gone. You know, I've lost the ability to manage and control this part of my life. I'm powerless here. And then once I've accepted that, I'm willing to do what you guys tell me. And it says in the big book, none of us want to do this thing. At some of these, we balked. Some of these steps, we balked. No one comes in here wanting to do this. I mean, no one. I've never met anyone who's like, I really want to do this. I didn't. And yet, for me, that's the beauty of despair and admitting powerlessness. It's like, well, I don't have any other choice. It's like death. It's a life and death, black and white thing for me. So what I wanted to focus on today was steps 2 through 12, because a lot of focus in recovery and see how, especially, is on the food. And it's so important, the food part, the weighing and the measuring. I think the first year of abstinence, recovery, sobriety from compulsive eating is about the food in a lot of ways. You know, we're learning to weigh and measure. We're learning to put the food on the scale. We're asking a ton of questions. We're losing the weight, which feels so good. And I will never underestimate the power of weight loss. I really think it is important. It kept me coming back. The first year when I was struggling, when I wanted to go out, I couldn't deny the numbers on the scale getting lower and lower and lower, and that helped me come back. You know, thank God for that little piece of vanity, you know, because it kept me coming back. I couldn't deny it. So in the worst moments, I was like, this does work. But what happens once we reach goal weight and we've been calling in our food daily and we're working the tools, there's a promise in this. I have the mini version in front of me. This is the big book. The little big book. There is a promise in here, and it doesn't have anything to do with the stuff that we talk about in relationship to the food. So I handed that page 25 in the big book. I encourage you guys to read pages 10 through 16 in the big book on your own. It's Bill's story. We're not going to read it today. But in that, he talks about his process of having a spiritual awakening, which is what this workshop is about. And so I encourage you to read that, pages 10 through 16. It's on your handout. But for now, we're going to read Bill's page 25, In There Is a Solution. And it says this: there is a solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings, which the process requires for its successful consummation. But we saw that it really worked in others, and we had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as we had been living it. When therefore we were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us but to keep up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. A simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into the fourth dimension, which is the title of this workshop, the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. This is a promise, yeah? This is good. This is good stuff. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences. That asterisk there means that there's an appendix in the back of the big book that describes spiritual experience, and if you haven't read it, I really encourage you to. So we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. That's a huge promise. The central fact of our lives today isn't that I weigh and measure my food, although I do, 3 times a day, without exception. But the central fact of my life today is the absolute certainty that our Creator, whatever that is to each of us, has entered into our hearts and our lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. If you are as seriously a compulsive eater as we were, we believe there is no middle-of-the-road solution. And this is kind of what I really want to focus on today. There's no middle-of-the-road solution. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible, and if we had passed into the region from which there is no return through human aid, we had but two alternatives. One was to go on to bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could, and the other to accept spiritual help. So I get to a place where I have to make a choice, you know, to live on a spiritual, altruistic plane or eat compulsively. That's what my life came down to. And the more time I experienced having abstinence, the more I realized how ill I was, and the more I come to realize how disconnected I was. I've always believed in God. I'm going to use the word God. It works for me. If that's a trigger word for you, please throw it away. Use a word that works for you. I think words are so corrupted today. God, love, you know, but whatever works for you. This is saying there is a solution. None of us like it. No practicing compulsive eater can imagine doing these things. But here we go. Lack of power. That was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. That's exactly what this book is about. It says, and we agnostics, this entire book is only about that. Finding a power greater than ourselves. That's it. That's like, it says in the earth, that's what this whole thing is about. If you told me that on day one of abstinence, it wouldn't have worked for me. Which is why I say, I hope everyone here has taken step one. You know? But once we have that experience of sobriety with food under our belt, what makes me a compulsive eater isn't that I have a food problem. And I'm feeling this from AA speakers. This is not, I can't take credit for this. I'm so grateful, by the way, to the Old Timers and Alcoholics Anonymous who have taught me so much. So much. To me, it's the same illness, different substance, yeah? So what makes me a compulsive eater isn't that I have a food problem, it's that I have a life problem. I don't know how to live. And I use food to manage it, which makes food my best friend until it takes me out to a point that I'm not even functioning or living or my body becomes completely unmanageable. I think most of us in here know the horror of living in a body that is so much bigger. And the beauty of being an addict, the horror of being an addict, but the beauty of being an addict is that it's my road back home. Because I cannot stay sober with food and not be in conscious contact. I cannot be recovering from compulsive eating and not be growing on a spiritual basis. You know, we hear the phrase, the road gets narrower. And that's my experience. And that doesn't have to be a scary thing. I think for a long time I'd hear God's will, God's will, and I'm like, oh no, oh no, oh no. You know, what does that mean? It means it can be everything that I don't want. And sometimes that is true. But it's always what I need, and I like to think that life is like a book, and when I'm scared and I'm resisting, I'm reading like one word of the book, and I'm thinking that this one word is the whole book. And when I'm in fear or doubt, it's so helpful for me to remember, no, this is just one word on one page of a very big volume, which was here before I got here and will be here after I got here, you know, and I can trust. And trusting to me is a matter of practice. You know, I had a sponsor once tell me, I've had many sponsors in CIHA, that we practice our relationship with God. It's not just like, I trust, I have total faith. I am levitating right now. You know, it's like it doesn't work like that. It's a practice. It's a practice. The more I trust in God, the thing that I didn't want to do, and then I see it worked out, and I'm still here, and I'm still sober with food. So what I'm taught in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is that I need a complete and total psychic change. Dr. Silkworth talks about this. Phil W. talks about this. The stories in the back of the Big Book talk about this. A complete and total psychic change to not take sugar, flour, excess food, or quantity into my body for one 24-hour period of the time. Today is Saturday, July 28, 2012. Saturday, today, I don't eat compulsively. One 24-hour period of the time. I'm just as susceptible to eating tomorrow as anyone else is, you know? Nowhere in our book does it say after you have 9 or 10 or 3 or 2 years, are you like less likely to eat compulsively? It doesn't work that way. Hi, David. So I'm going to read one more thing, and then we're going to go into a little bit of a exercise that literally changed my life. So this is called The Golden Key, and this is kind of what we were just touching on. Our problem actually is a living problem, and we have to have a living answer. Not a concept, not an idea, but a living answer. It's my opinion that there isn't a living answer for the non-compulsive eater or the alcoholic or the compulsive eater alike that does not include a personally satisfactory conscious partnership with the living God that made us in the entire business of living. This again is Chuck C. Walking alone is not normal. It is not natural. And many of us have walked alone for most of our lives. I walked alone for 43 years, wanting so badly to be a part of and always apart from. That is not normal. The next part I'm not going to read because I put it on the handout. It's on page 28 and 29. We can look at that in a second. You don't have to look at it now. So I've been in maintenance now for almost 3 years, 2 3/4 years, I guess. And maintenance has a lot of challenges, yeah. And when I was struggling earlier this spring through the unmanageability of my life, because I'm only 3 1/2, you know, it's like I'm just learning how to live. A great fellow in this room, a great old-timer, said, you know, Kailani, when we start to really struggle, relapse, it's always working the steps backwards. Because I completed the steps a long time ago, but now I just reworked them. So she said, what step do you think you're on? And I sat there and I thought, oh my gosh, I think I'm on step 2. I still totally admit that I'm powerless over food, but I think I've gone all the way back to step 2. I have not come to believe. I am trying to control and manage my life. And I'm suffering, and I'm miserable, and I'm tired, and I'm exhausted, and I'm lonely, and on and on and on and on. And I'm desperate, and I'm whiny, and I'm hungry, and I'm just, you know. So I'm not coming to believe. These are not the what I was describing were not the promises in the big book. So I called another old-timer, because this is what I do when I start to go crazy. It says psychosis, by the way, is like not being in reality. So I often identify myself when I go into these states as being psychotic, because I'm not in reality when I'm not miserable. You know? The word sounds dramatic, but it's actually a true definition if you read it in the dictionary like I did. So, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. So I called up this old-timer who's been a real go-to for me since my first days of sobriety in this program. And he said, Kailani, what do you believe about God? And these are the three questions I'm going to invite us to go into. What do you believe about God? What do you believe God believes about you? And what do you believe about yourself? Because I can give you a map to go to Seattle, but if you don't know what state you're in, that map is going to be useless. So I like to start at the end. You know, before I do anything, I want to know what I'm going towards. I'm not going to go on a vacation and not know where I'm going, you know. So the end of our 12th step is having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. That's the very first beginning of the 12th step. So I know that's where I'm going, but I have to know where I'm standing to get there. Otherwise, it's just this idea. So I realized that after like 3 years in Compulsive Eaters Anonymous Hell, I didn't actually really know where I was standing. That was like such an epiphany to me. So I answered these questions. What do I believe about God? What do I believe God believes about me? And what do I believe about myself? And I noticed it was all over the map. Some of this was like, yeah, God loves me, God is good, blah, blah. But I also had some other beliefs in there as well, especially with the what a God believes about me. I realized when I did mine that there was a lot of judgment. I really felt judged, very superstitious, very nervous. And same with what do I believe about myself. I had all the good self-talk that we, you know, hear and learn, like, you know, I am God's child, blah, 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 blah. But then I also had all this really dark stuff too, which is fine. The point is not really what we write, it's that we know where we're at. Because intellectually I can know things, But internally, if I'm having a different experience, I'm going to be in constant conflict. And I think we see that all the time with addicts. Yeah, I don't want to keep doing it. I don't want to keep doing it, but I'm doing it. I'm reading the self-help book about not eating while I'm eating the sugar with the stains on the page. You know, it's like all those books have, like, brown stains from what I'm seeing. Oh, my gosh. Okay. It's a very dark time. So that's what I'm going to invite us to do here. So I wrote on the handout, our belief systems determine our actions. We can't make a decision and act on that decision until we know what we are deciding about. How can I decide to turn my will and my life over to God when I don't know what I'm coming to believe in, when I haven't decided what God is to me? And whatever we decide it is today, that can change tomorrow or next week. It's a living God, yeah? My body is going to change. I'm going to get more wrinkles. I might get a little bigger, a little smaller, depending upon my hormones. Who knows? But, like, it's a living body. I'm going to change. And my relationship with God is, it's a living, breathing relationship. If it's just a mental one, I'll eat, hands down. I will not stay sober with food long term. No way. So we can't make a decision and act on that decision until we know what we are deciding about. If we want to change our actions, we need to change our belief system. But before I can change my belief system, I have to know what it is. One of my belief systems before I came here is that I need food to feel better. I need food to cope. I need food to survive. I need it right now or I'm probably going to die. I mean, these are the unconscious thoughts. I'm shaking. I'm going through withdrawal. I need it now. That's a belief system. So they're laughing. I hope we laugh a little bit because we're supposed to laugh in recovery. But this is the serious part, and it is, you know, because this is the foundation in which we're growing and moving. I'm going to just let's take like 5 minutes. This is an ongoing process. I took a few days to write this. I had in my notebook, I had one page of what do I believe about God, page two, what do I believe God believes about me, page three, what do I believe about myself. And I just wrote throughout those couple days, like, things that would come up. Like, I believe that. I definitely believe that. And I just added to it. But so for today, for this moment, let's just start there. Let's take a few minutes. And just that question 1, 2, and 3, I'd invite you just to answer those for yourself as honest as you can. All right. So for those of you who just came in, we're talking about steps 2 through 12 and that the end of the steps is having had a spiritual awakening and that we can't really know where we're going if we don't know where we are right now. So we're defining what our relationship with God is. So I don't know if anyone would like to share anything. Would anyone? Yeah? Okay, I'd love to hear.
Hi, everybody. I'm Roberta. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Roberta.
So what I wrote was, number one, what do I believe? What do I believe about God? That He is all knowing and all powerful, that He loves me, that He has it all under control. What do I believe God believes about me? That I am His daughter, that I'm exactly the way He wants me to be, for example, a compulsive eater, that I'm not a mistake, nor am I going through anything surprising to Him, and that He knows my frailties and insecurities. What do you believe about yourself? That I must not be doing something right, otherwise I would be more successful in my job.
Did anyone else want to share anything that they wrote? No pressure at all? Oh, good. Okay, we'll do one more.
Hi, my name is Joanne. I'm a compulsive eater from Michigan.
Hi, Joanne.
What do I believe about God? God loves me unconditionally. God loves us all. God wants me to ask Him and to come to Him to fill my needs. God will fill my every need. What do I believe God believes about me? I think He considers me one of His precious children. And what do I believe about myself? I believe I'm a work in progress. I am exactly what God created. And since He created me, He can change me.
Okay, great. So both these women who shared are women who I outreach who have quite a bit of recovery. So their answers are like pretty perfect in terms of I think about what God. If your answers are a little darker, that's totally cool because mine were. The point is that we begin to know where we are. Yeah. So if I notice I believe God is judging me or I don't really feel God is there or I feel this hole or here I am, I'm wanting to eat, I feel alone, I'm in a lot of mental obsession, And then I make an outreach call, and they're like, just trust in God. And I'm like, you know, for the longest time, that's where I was at. You don't understand. I believe in God, but I'm lying in my bed. I want to die. I'm severely depressed, and I can't see anything or even feel anything. And what is, I feel empty. I feel alone, you know. So to do this here, it was so helpful to me, because to not just have this feeling, this indescribable feeling, but to be able to name it, be like, okay, well, that doesn't work for me. And it says throughout our literature again and again, like, what works for you? The God is you understand God. So I'm not going to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to something that I don't trust and that I don't feel some sort of security with. I'm told, well, we're told, I guess, through the steps, and I put this on your workshop, in your worksheet, that the steps are really broken down to this. Admit, believe, decide, action, results. So we've done the admission in step one. We believe, come to believe in step two. We admit. Okay, so we admit, believe, decide, and we take action, we do results. So, again, I'm not going to decide to turn my will and my life over to something until I've come to believe in something that I can trust. What the steps invite me to is to enter the circle. I'm already there, literally, but mentally, you know, emotionally, spiritually, I'm not. So it's reconnecting, getting back into the circle, into that life, into that good, into that God. After I answered these questions, I began to see more what my belief system was, and I ended up taking kind of like a line. Again, I encourage you to sit with these questions, a line from each thing. So what do I believe God believes about me? What do I believe about God? What do I believe God believes about me? And what do I believe about myself? And I sort of siphoned it down into like three sentences that I could return to. So the next time I was triggered, which is multiple times throughout every single day, I could return to, wait, this is what I believe. And I've really come to believe, since being a member of Compulsive Eaters Anonymous, how that we each need a belief system. It doesn't matter which belief system we choose, but I need an anchor. And that's what the book, Big Book, tells me. It could be Compulsive Eaters Anonymous, how. It could be the 12 steps. But I need an anchor to return to, because I have an obsession of the mind that's very fragmented, and I need a point to go back to. You know, I need a point to focus on. So once I do this, I can make a decision. Step three, I can make a decision to turn my will and my life over. There's this joke, like, I'm going to tell it wrong. I'm a terrible joke teller, so forgive me in advance. But there's like four frogs sitting on a log, and one decides to jump in the water. How many are left on the log? Four. All right. He decided, but he didn't jump, yeah? So it's great to make a decision, but 4 through 12 is the action that complements, that puts into action that decision. So step three, okay, I have an idea. I know that I'm in California, so I've been given that map that we talked about. So now it's not just like there's a map to Seattle, but I don't know where I am. It's like, okay, there's a map to Seattle, and I know I'm in California. I know where I stand. I have some really messed up ideas about God and about what God believes about me that no wonder I'm not trusting. You know, it's sort of like an abused animal going to a new loving owner, and they're like, come here, little Joey, or whatever. And the dog's like, you know, no, I've been whacked and beaten and starved, and I'm not going. But the owner's like, but I love you. I want to feed you organic dog food and give you a really beautiful little doghouse and love you and take you to the river and throw sticks. And the dog's like, no, whimpering. You're hurting me. And that's kind of how I was with God. Yeah, like, so those questions helped me see that that's where I was. So when I make a decision to turn my will and my life over, I'm going, I'm not turning over to that. I'm building a new belief system, which takes time. And like it says in the book, it's a living relationship. It's going to grow. It's going to grow, just like a child matures into a man or woman. It's going to grow. So I'm going to give it space to grow. It cannot grow if I am not abstinent. It cannot grow if I'm using. Not possible. Because every single time I use food, I'm agnostic. Every time I use food, food is my higher power. I am dependent. I cannot grow in a relationship with God when I am using a substance. It's not possible. That's why it says step one is the only thing that we do perfectly. It's the only black or white. Everything else is muddy and gray and in between. That's why we have step six and seven to help us with all that muddy gray. But no, I have to stay abstinent. And that's why when people say, feel the feelings, oh my gosh. I remember being told that, like, no way. I'm not just going to feel the feelings and feel horrible again and again and again and again. Like, that's not. But what I learned in C-How is every time I don't pick up, it's not just like I'm feeling a horrible feeling. It's like every time I don't pick up, I'm growing through that feeling. It's never going to be exactly that way again, ever. It's not possible because I'm growing. I may get triggered in the same ways, but it's always growing. It's always evolving each time I don't use. So once I realized I wasn't feeling horrible in vain, that I was actually building character through practicing these principles rather than using, gave me a lot more incentive to keep going. It's like turning on the faucet and like in the house it's been turned off and it's like orange and you're like, oh God, ugh, I would never drink that. You don't turn it off. You let it flow till the water gets clear. Every single time I use, I'm turning the faucet back up. Step two. Step three, we make a decision. Step four, we inventory, we take action. Such an important step. I'm not going to do this because of time, but I wanted to encourage, you know, I was going to have you guys sort of turn to the person next to you, and maybe we can do this in our head or do it with someone after, but just find one thing maybe that you discovered in doing that step two and deciding to turn your will and life over, and one thing that you want to inventory. It could be anything. It could be a relationship. It could be why you feel a certain way about God, why you hate the word God, why, I don't know. It could be anything. What's one thing you want to inventory and share it? Actually, let's do it. Let's take 45 seconds. Take one thing. It doesn't have to be the deepest thing about some abuse, but just turn to someone next to you. Let's share it. And then in that sharing, you don't have to be nice. You don't have to like say your name and where you're from and all that stuff and that you like the other person's shirt. Just like, let's cut to it. You know, let's say this is one thing I discovered. This is one thing that I want to share with you. That's step five. We share it, right? We're only as sick as our secrets. We let go of the secrets. The shame begins to dissolve. You know, we stop stuffing down with food. The shame begins to dissolve. So much of my disease is about the shame. Just walking around like this shame ball. And then let's identify one thing. Oh, I'm going to lose people as soon as we do partners. This always happens. That's why I don't do the partner thing. You don't have to do the partner thing. We're isolators at heart. It's not in our nature. and what's in the way? Identify a defect. So let's say I uncover that I don't trust God, and that's because I had a relationship with one of my primary caregivers that really judged and criticized me. So in step six, I might notice that I am very rebellious, you know, or that I have a lot of pride, you know, or that I am very self-obsessed because I had to be because no one else really, like, paid attention to me when I grew up in the house I grew up in because they were all struggling with their own addictions, you know, God bless them. So these are some of the defects I might discover. So that's in the way of me getting closer to God. And then step seven is, well, God, I'm willing to have you change this for me. I'm willing for it to be different. And then step eight and nine, I'm thinking, wait, in all of my pride and self-obsession and resistance and rebellion, have I hurt anybody? Well, yeah, actually. My poor little brother had to live with this in the disease his whole childhood. That was terrible for him. He had to live with a really mentally ill sister who was binging and hiding, and everything was about her, and there was just total chaos in the house because of me. I was the tornado, the cyclone that the Big Book talks about. So I owe him an amends, and I have given him an amends. So that's all eight and nine is. Do you guys want to do this really quickly with each other? Let's take 2 minutes. Just turn to someone, identify a simple thing, and see if you can walk through like four through nine. Yeah? Inventory something, share it. What's a defect that you discover from that? And do you possibly owe anyone, including yourself, an amends? And then we'll come back in, like, a few minutes. So we can continue this afterwards as well. I do want to just have one, what's, like, that dangerous show when they're, like, don't try this at home or whatever? I don't know. There used to be a show like that on MTV. So I'm going to say this, you know, if you're not on these steps yet with your sponsor, do not leave here and start making amends to people. I beg of you, don't do it. You know, I'm just doing this because I think a lot of times the steps seem very elusive, like the 12 steps. No, they're really simple. I'm powerless. I got to come to believe in something bigger than me. I'm going to make a decision. I'm going to inventory. I'm going to share it. I'm going to find my defects, apologize to those that I've harmed, spot check, meditate and pray, and give back to others. That's it. These are the 12 steps, like spiritual principles that have been around since the beginning of time. Honesty, admission, restitution, surrender, you know, service. But the point of this is to show you that you can do this. All of you just did, like, you've just gone through step 9, basically, in a very rough, rugged way. You know, like, this is doable. You're gonna make it, you know, and that's kind of what I wanted to just invite you to experience directly. I was speaking with someone, and they reminded me of one of my own defects of character, which is, you know, needing attention, needing a lot of affection and attention. That's a big one, yeah? And that's normal. It says, and I love the 12 and 12. I travel a lot, so I have the minis of everything. I love the 12 and 12. I love step 6 and 7, written so beautifully. Step 7, I was reading it this morning. And, you know, it's like our defects are normal human needs that have just gone out of whack. That's it. It's okay. Like, we get to have super loads of compassion for ourselves. So, like, my need for attention, it's just something that's, like, surpassed normal. It's not like I'm not supposed to ever get any love and affection. No, it's like an essential part of being a human being. But when I put that as my number one priority, and I live my life for that, and I wake up in the morning and it's centered around that, and in different phases of my disease, I'd exercise compulsively because I couldn't be loved, and it's like, you know, and like, and I'm at a concert, and then I need the lead person to know to see me, because if I don't matter, then I don't exist, and if I don't exist, it's like crazy. Crazy. Craziness. That doesn't serve me. And I can't serve anyone else when I'm in that level of self-obsession all the time. All step 7 is doing is, it's like we weigh and measure our food. It's just trying to, like, weigh and measure. You know? And I'll go out of whack, but I have tools to bring me right back into the middle again. I love this. I'm going to read again from this book. It says, people don't do what they do because they want to, but because they have to. Just as I ate and you ate against our own will, we have to come to see that obsessions of the mind, whoever has them, are greater than willpower. This is so important because again and again we see people relapsing over, I mean, so many sponsors I've worked with. They go back. I'm never going to do it again. I'm never going to do it again. I always cringe when I hear that. Oh, gosh, don't say it. You know, because all I hear is their willpower. That was the last time. I never think that way. I should never say that. I don't think that way today. You know, I don't think that way. I know I'm capable of, like, going out to pizza or whatever later, you know, and I pray to God that does not happen. I don't want to eat, but then why would I? Again and again and again. Why would I gain 100 pounds in 1 year. Shannon, who spoke last night, who's so wonderful, you know, I don't know if she said this last night, but she said, no one wakes up on January 1st going, I want to gain 100 pounds this year. New Year's resolution, baby. Like, yeah. No, it does not happen. It doesn't happen. That was against my will. But I did. I ate myself running every single day, by the way. That's how much food I was eating. Running every single day, gaining 100 pounds in a young, high metabolic body, the age of 19, 20, that's a lot of food. And I know you guys get it. So it says, when the will and the imagination and or the emotions are in conflict, the emotions and the imagination always win. We ate against our own will. And so people don't do what they do because they want to, but because they have to. I get the chills just reading every time I read that. I know that I ate compulsively to try to maintain and preserve my mental sanity. Because that's how unmanageable my life was and still is. And so whenever someone is using, I have so much compassion because A, I'm them. There's no difference. I just am not using at this moment. But B, it's like, I was just trying to save my life. I'm trying to stay sane. I have a sponsee who's texting me, even though she knows I'm leading a workshop. But yeah, she's new, so it's all about her, and that's okay. So, oh no, she just said, praying for you. Good luck. That's good. That's a good turnaround. So, you know, it's that same thing. When she goes to use again, I watch it. I watch her, and she feels so like, and she's me. That's why we get to sponsor. Thank you, God. Thank you, God, that I get to sponsor. I get to see me again and again and again, and that makes me not want to use, because I watch my sponsees go back, and it's like Groundhog Day. Every single time. It never changes. And I'm like, oh my gosh. You know? Oh my gosh. So it goes right back to like, she feels like she's going to lose her mind, and the obsession is so strong, and I just can't take it, and on all the unmanageable things underneath it, from jobs to relationships to children to this to that and the other. And it's like, yep. And we hate the slimes, like, just don't pick up. No! Yes! You know? And this is where these steps, this into action, comes in. This one of these old timers I mentioned to you before said he had a sponsee. He said, you know, I'm going to change his name. Bob, I want to become a plumber. And the fellow, Bob, was like, great, what do you have to do to become a plumber? And he said, I have no idea. He said, well, why don't you go find out and do it? A year later, he calls Bob, his sponsor, or not hopefully just a year later, but a year later he calls him about this thing, and he says, oh my gosh, you're never going to believe it. I'm a plumber. He's like, amazing, amazing. He admitted, I want to become a plumber. I want to stop eating compulsively. My life is totally, totally a wreck. I don't know how, everyone's rock bottom is different. For me, I was suicidal. I was institutionalized. I'd been to eating disorder centers, and then I was in a crisis support unit. So for me, it was like black or white, life or death, yeah? I think it is for all of us, but some of us go to more severe states than others. So he admitted. He came to believe I could become a plumber. I could do it. I personally don't want to become a plumber, but he did. He made a decision. I'm going to do it. He took action, and then he got the result. I can say I want to stop eating. I can say I'm going to come to believe in something bigger than me, and I can even decide to do it. But if I don't take the action, a year later, I'm still going to be in the same overweight body or one that's even bigger without the result. Again, just to come back to this, the idea is a spiritual awakening. And so we do that through 4 through 12. Step 10 is just spot as an inventory. We can spot check throughout the day. We all know it when we say something and we're like, oh, why did I say that? Oh, and sometimes it's just recognizing it myself. Sometimes it's telling my sponsor about it later. I spot check throughout the day. I think New Year's and birthdays are great ways to do year inventories. I was like, you know, what's happened this year? Where have I grown? Where do I need to grow more? You know, like use the day, the week, the month, birthdays to take that inventory. And then step 11 and 12, my favorite, prayer and meditation. Beautiful step. Let's do this here. I don't normally read this much, but when you go to the literature, you really can't mess up because the literature is so good. Belief in God is good, but it's not good enough. If you're a compulsive eater, living in God is the only answer there is. Whoa. That's strong. That's a strong statement. If you're a compulsive eater, living in God, or whatever word works for you, is the only answer there is. The consciousness of the living presence of God, the only answer there is. In Him I live and move and have my being. So when we know better, we do better. I knew it from the neck up for 40 years. I know it all over now. And he also says, I have a little trick that I wouldn't trade for $1 million. I share everything in life with my God. Everything. The good, bad, and the different. I share it and dump it. Look, he gives an example. When I do a lousy stunt, which I do, step 10, he says, I take it into my closet with me and I say, look, Dad, look what I did yesterday. Isn't this a lousy thing for a guy like me to do? I knew better when I did it, but I had to make an impression, and now I don't like it, and you don't like it, and I'm going to do better, and with your help, I'll do a lot better. Thank you. Conversation. It has to be real. Like, and that's what I try to practice every day with my higher power, with my God, is to have a conversation. I actually say Dad sometimes. I'm like, so Dad, you know, or whatever works for you. What's a personal prayer for you? And it can be ongoing and changing every single day. But to begin that dialogue, you know, the same Swansea, she is anonymous. You know, she just can't wrap her head around that. You know? She's like, I feel stupid. And I was like, yeah, do you feel like you're talking to, like, the Easter Bunny or something, or Santa Claus? And she's like, worse. I feel like an idiot. Be willing to feel foolish. That's how I feel. Like, Kailani, be willing to feel foolish. Be willing to be foolish. Begin talking. Faith is something we can't see. If we could see it, it would be knowledge. If we could see it, it would be knowledge. It would no longer be faith because I see it. The fact that there's a chair there isn't faith. I can see it. I have knowledge that there's a chair there. If the chair wasn't there and you told me to believe in the chair, I'd have to have faith in you that you were telling me the truth. Faith without works is dead. When I put this stuff into action, that's when I begin to build my faith. So you can do it now. I just put it there, you know, just to invite yourself into a personal prayer. Talk to God. Just practice it. Keep it super casual. You don't have to put on a gown. Hey, God, I'm really nervous about this thing. I'm moving tomorrow. I don't even know if this is the right place. Will you be with me? I know that you go with me wherever I am. I'm really hungry. I'm wanting to eat my breakfast at 1 a.m. I know technically I could, because 3 meals a day when I measure it's a new day, but I know it's not really good for me. It doesn't messes with my head. I need some help here. You know, is there someone I could call that would maybe have some insight for me? Someone I could call that I could help that might help me, you know? Like, just talk. It's real. It's authentic. It's genuine. That, to me, is what a relationship, a living relationship with a higher power looks like. This is not some, like, special thing. Think of it. It's such an honor to be doing this workshop with you guys, because this is what it's about to me. It's like making these principles just so tangible and real. Just the way we put our food on the scale, and it's so tangible and simple. So are these steps. There don't have to be these just far out ideas that we'll eventually get to. There are things that we can do every day, all day, throughout the day, one day at a time. Oh my gosh. Okay. So, I think I'm going to take these last 10 minutes that we have before lunch. One of the three favorite moments of the day. Because let's face it, you know, we love food. Although in my recovery, I have thought if someone could give me 3 pills a day, I would probably just take it because it would be easier. But I love my meals. I was going to just guide us to a really short meditation. Just again, I really want to put all this into practice so it's experiential and not just a lot of yap, 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 yap. And I'm so grateful that you guys have been so willing to just participate. So let's just close our eyes. This will be short. Don't worry. Or worry if you want. So I always hear worry is like, you know, unnecessary prayer. Yeah, that would be great. So let's close our eyes. Let's put both feet flat on the floor. Just take a breath. Inhale. Exhale. So I like to start every morning in meditation. Oh, this is awesome. Take in the laughter. That's great. That's really good from next door. And I try to do 20 minutes now, but honestly, I tell my sponsees who are new to this, like, 1 minute is so stellar. It does not have to be this really long thing. 1 minute, 5 minutes, put on a timer. And I like to do it first thing in the morning just to, like, center my mind, focus my mind. Just like when you drive to work, you have a vision in your mind of the building that you're driving to, yeah? You're not just, like, randomly jumping in your car and driving. That would be chaos. So why would I do that with my day and my mind? Meditation is my focus point. saying, first thing in the morning, you know what, God, I give my day to you. I know that I'm an addict, and my addiction is my way back to you, back to some sort of deeper spiritual understanding. And so I'm dedicating this day to this relationship, to this dwelling in you, whatever you are, whatever I'm coming to believe you are to be. And then I usually say the day. I'm like, oh, today's Saturday, July 28th. Interesting. You know, just I get that in. So I'm present. Today, there's never going to be another day like today, this 24-hour period. And I noticed that, and I had that intention of coming closer to God. Sometimes I'll feel like a big, warm blanket around me, maybe not in the middle of the summer, but it's just wrapped around me, and I think of that as like love, just those loving arms of a higher power. In the step two exercise that we did, you know, coming to believe, what do you believe about God? Do you believe that about your God? Those loving arms? This is a time to refine step two. What is it that I'm coming to believe in, that I'm deciding to turn my will and my life over to? This is the time to experience that new relationship outside of a mental concept. So I feel like, you know, my butt and my thighs on the chair. I try to sit in a nice cozy armchair at home. And I feel my back against the back of the chair. And I notice how that chair is like totally supporting me. I'm not paying it. I didn't say anything nice to it. It didn't put on a special outfit or makeup. It's just there. It's like, here. I'm here. You can sit on me. And then this ground, same thing. The ground is holding the chair, totally selflessly. I'm here. The structure of the building is holding the floor. The earth is holding the building. It's like everything is here for us. And that beautiful line, nothing's happening to me. Everything's happening for me. Am I willing enough for just this moment to open to that? And that takes courage, a lifetime of fighting and resistance and protecting. Takes a lot of courage to open. But these are the safe spaces for me that I get to practice that. And then in that moment of quietness, I notice that I'm being breathed. How amazing is that? I am being breathed. I'm not forcing this. I'm not like, okay, now I'm going to inhale. It's happening for me. My heart's beating for me. The blood is circulating through my veins for me. That's not proof in something bigger than myself at work. The fact that there's plants growing outside, that there's people speaking and breathing all around us, I'm not controlling or managing any of it. That's power greater than me at work. And then sometimes I'll do a body scan, starting at my toes, putting my attention in my toes. You know, as a compulsive eater, I spend a lot of time in my head. I'm very thinky. I think a lot. So to get into my body has been a crucial part of my recovery. You know, myself and a lot of addicts that I see were very dissociated. We live very much from the neck up energetically. So to get grounded, I mean, one of the great things about food is that it just takes me back, gets me grounded. But I can't use that anymore. So I could, but I don't want to. I want to live today. So I'm going to put my energy in my toes and scan that up my feet, my heels, shins, calves. I usually go slower, but up to the knees, behind the kneecaps, to the thighs. And if you find any places you're scanning that's uncomfortable or hurts or whatever, you know, just notice it. We're finally noticing. Into your hips and your belly. Just feel like your liver and your kidneys and your adrenals and everything just... You know that wonderful feeling that food gives us where we're like, ah, yes, then Jerry, I love you so much. Oh, and I did so much, you know. It's like the steps, prayer and meditation, are designed to give me the same relief. It just takes a little bit more effort, a little more practice, and a little more time. So up through the body, up through the shoulders, notice how the mind wants to focus on something else. This is totally the nature of the addict mind. I want to focus on something else. It's okay. Into the shoulders, down through the arms and the hands and the fingers and the fingernails. Relax your jaw, your eyes, your lips, your throat, top of your head, your hair, your ears, your tongue. Again, you can take longer with this at home. And the other thing that I'll invite you to do just before we wrap up here is another large part of my meditation for me that was important in terms of getting in my body was actually sometimes just feeling my body, to remember that it was there. That may sound weird, but when you live in your head, or when I've lived in my head, it's like I lose reality with the physical. So even just take your right hand and put pressure on your left hand. And this sounds really basic, but I would say, this is my hand. This is my hand. And I do that. It's up. This is my arm. This is my shoulder. And just like, this is my hand. It belongs to me. This is my hand. You know? The spiritual world is very much rooted in our physical being. It's not just this ethereal realm. I get to bring it into my physical reality. I get to be a whole person. So let's just take a few more breaths in through the nose, out. And in a few breaths, when you open your eyes, I'm going to invite you to go back to that paper that you wrote on with the step two questions and just write a few lines. It's like a personal prayer, or just talk with God, maybe something that you noticed or something that you need help with, or it could be just thank you. But let's just take a moment to just connect with God. Is there anyone who has had an experience that they want to share before we wrap up here? Whether it was in the meditation or in the writing or just something that shifted, maybe even about God as you've come to understand God? I just want to invite anyone. I'm going to say a few more things, but if you decide before we wrap up with a serenity prayer that you just want to take a moment to share, just would so honor that. So while you're writing, I'm just going to say a few thoughts that, for whatever reason, I felt moved to write on your handout that have helped me, things that I've discovered through this step two writing and this prayer and meditation, which is, do not be afraid of the will of God. Whatever God is to you is the best thing that could ever happen. My sponsors can tell you that I am really unpracticed at this. I'm very scared a lot. But every day that I put this into motion, I'm discovering that not only am I not afraid, it's all that I want. It's all that I want. It's all that there is. It's practice. The other thing is, don't confuse comfort with peace. Yeah? There's a lot of things that I want to do that I feel like would be really good for me. When I get quiet, I don't feel peace when I think of doing that. And that's the moment where I go, oh no. I'll give you a really quick example. There's somewhere else I want to be living right now. I have a commitment in this other location I need to fulfill. I feel better thinking, fantasizing about being there. When I get quiet, I know this is where I have to be. Don't confuse comfort with peace. Be willing to be inconvenienced to know the peace that I'm truly longing for. I'm willing to be inconvenienced from my good idea to experience my higher power. That's huge. That's a life of freedom right there for me. Be willing to be inconvenienced. No one has shown me that more than people in these rooms, people who have a spiritual practice discipline. Come stay with me. But isn't it inconvenient? Yeah, it's very inconvenient. Come stay with me. Thank you. You just helped me stay sober. Thank you. The first 3 days that I had abstinence here, I spent them at a friend's house, a fellow's house, because I knew that on my own, I would eat, even though I didn't want to. It's what we read. My will didn't want to, but my emotions and my imagination took me there. Was I an inconvenience to that person? Definitely. I was really messed up. They are willing to be inconvenienced, and through that, I believe that they began to know more peace with their higher power. They've told me. So, may I be inconvenienced many times throughout the day, because it's for my benefit, yeah? It doesn't mean that we don't have boundaries and healthy things like that, but that's why we have sponsors and fellows to run things by. We have a good checks and balance. The Spirit of God, as we each understand God, will tell you what is good for you, for me. Listen. I have to listen. Rigorous honesty. I may balk. I do. B-A-L-K, balk. But when I do the footwork, I stay to trust. No one comes here wanting to do this. I've never met anyone who wanted to come to Seattle. This is a terrible program. Great results. I want the results. Amazing results. Hard as all get out, right? So hard. But simple. So that rigorous honesty. You know, I know when I'm being dishonest because I'm justifying on the phone with my sponsor, like, but it's a really good idea because of the wonderful things it does. You know, it's like, and what's the truth? No, not the truth. The truth will set you free, right? So, would anyone like to come up and read this section from A Vision for You? Anyone? Okay, Sherry, yeah. Okay.
It's a little taller than me. Oh, push that back. Hi, I'm Sherry, compulsive eater. Can you hear me? Yeah, I think so. We know A Vision for You. We know what you are thinking. You are saying to yourself, I'm jittery and alone. I couldn't do that, but you can. You can forget that you have just... You forget that you have just tapped a source of power much greater than yourself. To duplicate with such backing what we have accomplished is only a matter of willingness, patience, and labor.
That's never the part that we read, but I like it. I'm jittery and alone, and I couldn't do that, but we can. Because we have just tapped a source much greater than ourselves of power. And that's what this entire workshop was about. I hope that that's what you walk away with. So this whole program is about that handout. It's why, you know, refer to page 25 whenever you need to, or that beautiful line in We Agnostics that we were talking about. This entire big book, we had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. That's what this whole thing's about. I love it. So again, one of the very last lines in A Vision for You is abandon yourself to God as you understand God. And this is something that a good friend of mine wrote. She said, I started with drudgery. I think most of us come in here with that, yeah. Grew up a little into duty. Okay, I'll call you at 5:30 in the morning. Tried, but failed for a long time at discipline. Yep. I'm not going to eat that. I'll eat this. Oh, my gosh. I'm such a compulsive eater. I'm like, the convention's coming up. I need to lose some weight. That's my thinking. I'm on the road. When am I going to exercise? Because I haven't even been exercising very much lately. They're going to think I'm fat. They're not going to listen to me. I mean, this is my brain. It's a compulsive eater, yeah? I need to exercise more. I shouldn't have that extra condiment with my lunch or dinner, even though it's totally allowed, because I fail at discipline. Because I'm still eating that condiment, and I didn't, you know, it's like... So then life led me to a place of desperation with my thinking, especially today, because I'm not in the food today. And that's when desire for more of what he, or God, poured all over me led to absolute, unending, every morning delight. So today, I don't pray for the discipline. Today, I pray for the desire. God, please give me the desire to be sober with food. Please give me the desire to do your footwork. Please give me the desire to sponsor. Please give me the desire to call my sponsor. Please give me the desire to be of service. Please just implant with me the desire. You know, it's with the desire that I'm going to go to any length. Discipline, you know, not just one more burden. And my life's already, like, super unmanageable. Right? So it's like power greater than me, desire. Those are good. That's a good elixir for living. Thank you so much for participating and doing this together. What a gift. So why don't we stand, make a circle, hold hands, and we can end. Let's keep it recorded if possible. Yeah, and we'll end with a serenity prayer. And I'll stick around after if anyone wants to talk. And thank you to all the women in here who've helped me. Sherry, Roberta?
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change.